Our next case is number 2311791, Lopez versus Costco Wholesale Corp.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Douglas Eaton on behalf of the plaintiff. Actually a little surprised to get oral argument on this because I thought that the case that Judge Grant wrote, the Sedent case, can remove the question of why we are here. There's no longer any question as to whether or not a treating physician needs to file a 26AB2 report. He does not. And that was the basis for the JNOV granted in this case, and it's no longer the law. So we should have a reversal on that. Facing that issue, the defendant has raised a couple of fallback positions. First, they argued that...
Before you get to that,
sure.
Let me ask you a procedural question. As I understand the record, some testimony on causation was admitted. The jury heard it. And then the court said there was an objection, and the court sustained the objection, but never struck the testimony.
That's correct, Judge Pryor.
So what is the procedural posture of that? Was there a ruling when the court said, "I will not consider that testimony"? Or
no, the jury heard that testimony. The jury received causation opinions in the record, and so my primary argument in my initial brief before Sedent was issued was that it doesn't matter whether this should have been excluded or not, because the jury got it anyway. And so there was evidence of causation in the record on which they could base their opinion. It was entered without objection, and there was no relief requested with respect to the opinions that were admitted. Therefore, the jury's verdict should have stood.
In granting the judgment as a matter of law, did that have the effect of excluding the testimony?
It did not, because there was no request to exclude that testimony.
Seems to me in that order the district court said the testimony is inadmissible, and I'm granting JMOL on that basis.
Well, remember, the judge stopped it and said, "I'm not allowing any more testimony," right? And then, but there was no relief requested specific to the testimony that came in. So afterwards, they're saying, "Okay, well, you shouldn't have had any of that testimony come in." And he says, fine, he wasn't qualified to do that. But again, there was no request to strike the actual causation opinion that came in the records. You have to ask the relief if you're going to get it. You can't just assume the court's doing it. Courts don't do that. Courts don't grant relief sua sponte. So again, and I think, again, that's kind of an academic discussion because of Sedent, which controls.
So, let me ask you about, so Sedent is obviously dealing with the expert reports and when it's necessary, but let me turn your attention to Federal Rule of Evidence 702, and I want to ask whether you have an issue under that rule. The district court explicitly rejected Dr. Figueroa. Okay. Rejected his causation testimony in part because the full extent of the information that he had available to him concerning causation was that Ms. Lopez told him she slipped and fell on Costco's premises. And so how are you not running into a problem under 702, which says that a witness who is qualified as an expert by knowledge, skill, experience, training may testify in the form of an opinion if... And one of them is the testimony is based on sufficient facts or data. If his only information, the experts, the doctor's only information about causation is that she says this is what happened, how is that not presenting a problem under 702?
Well, two issues. One, that issue was not raised below. That argument was not made below, so it's waived. You can't bring it up on appeal the first time. They never sought to exclude the opinion because it was unreliable or inadequate or filed a Daubert motion or anything like that. So that's waived. Second, that's all testimony from treating physicians is based on that. How were you injured? I tripped on this rock and I fell and I hurt my knee. I mean, there's nothing, there's no cases that were cited by an opponent to suggest that there's something improper about taking a history from a patient and basing your opinion based on that history. Doctors do that all the time.
And then the injuries, I thought I remember testimony from the doctor that the injuries were consistent with what he would expect to see from a fall like that, as opposed to a nagging injury that had been present for years or something like that. Isn't that right?
Correct. And obviously, the court's familiar with the law that under Daubert, differential diagnoses is a reliable methodology, and that's what we're dealing with here. So I don't think that there's a 702 problem at all. And certainly, if there was, that was something that the defendant had to raise at the trial level, and they did not. So we can dispense with that argument. So facing that, the defendant moves on to a tipsy coachman argument, which is, okay, well, there wasn't enough evidence to support the jury's verdict on the actual slip and fall. Well, helpfully, this court came out with the Sutton case, which was basically identical to the facts of this case, down to the fact that it involved squished grapes and tracks through the grapes. We put the pictures of the scene in the brief. We had the testimony of the plaintiff saying that the track that you see in that photograph is not mine. So again, consistent with Sutton. Defendant cites to Encarnacion. I have the misfortune of being appellate's counsel on that case, so I was very familiar with it. This is not Encarnacion, fortunately. We have evidence that this had been there longer than the 10 minutes that they indicated they walked through. Jury could disbelieve Costco's employee's statement that she had walked through the aisle 10 minutes before. They had video that they could have shown demonstrating that. They didn't do that. On a JMOL, there has to be zero evidence or zero inferences that can support the jury verdict. That's obviously not the case here. Should we
determine whether the 26A2C disclosures were sufficient, or should we send that back to the district court?
Well, I don't think there was any argument that they were insufficient for a C disclosure. The argument was that you needed to file a B disclosure. So
they never raised an argument about whether you said enough in the C disclosure?
No, it was just they said, you know, you have to put an expert report out there. So I don't think there's any question about that. A C disclosure is very bare bones. It is, the treating physician is going to come in here and offer causation opinions. I believe that was easily met. Again, this panel is limited to the relief that was requested below. My opponent has asked for a series of different types of relief that they did not ask for below. You can't do that. It's too late. Perhaps if she had been down there, she could have given them advice and told them you guys should do this, but they're good ideas, but they're not before this court because they were not preserved. And that also goes with respect to sending it back down to argue the other bases for new trial. That they raised in their motion that the trial court did not weigh in on, because once it granted the JMOL, it said the rest is moot. In the 11th Circuit, you have to ask the court to then rule on it, or ask you in the answer brief to rule on it. Costco did neither. So the only remedy, the only two options this court has either is to affirm or to reverse and restore the jury verdict. And obviously we'd request that you do the latter. You don't have any further questions? I'll save my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court. I'm Alyssa Ryder of Wicker Smith on behalf of the Appalee Costco Wholesale Corporation. There's various routes that this court can take to affirm the judgment in favor of Costco. one of the routes is on the issue of constructive notice, because of course Florida law applied and there's a statute that says that it's the burden on the plaintiff to prove that the foreign transitory substance that she slipped on was on the ground for long enough that Costco should have had constructive notice of it. And the evidence did not support that finding.
Isn't this case just like Sutton?
It is not just like Sutton for
What's
two
different?
For two important reasons. And in fact, the Sutton court talked about that there's two pivotal issues that propelled it to reverse the summary judgment. And those are the two pivotal issues that differ from our case. Number one, in Sutton, the plaintiff testified that the track marks that she saw went through the grape. There is no such testimony by the plaintiff in this case. What she said was that she was in this area about 10 minutes before the incident. She did not see any grapes on the floor at that time. She came back to the area 10 minutes later, and then after she fell, she saw that there were grapes. And she says, she's asked, but you must have crossed over the grapes with your shopping cart before you fell, correct? And she says, correct. That's at Supplemental Appendix 32. So unlike Sutton, she's not saying that someone else's tracks went through the grapes. She says that her cart went through the grapes. So that's one way in which it's distinguishable. The other way is...
A jury concluded that she had met her burden to show what happened. Why would we... You could conclude from this evidence that the grapes had been there. So why would we interrupt a jury's decision on that?
Well, courts enter JNOVs in these sort of slip and fall cases all the time after...
Right, but that's not why the court entered the JNOV here, though.
No, that's correct. I'm just giving the court an alternative basis. The other point in Sutton that the court relied on was that there was a videotape of about an hour or 2 hours before the incident, and they did not see anybody dropping a grape during that time. And so they said that video at least provided a suggestion or some evidence that the grape had dropped sometime more than 2 hours before the incident. So that indicated a possibility of it being on the floor a long time. That's in stark contrast to here, where we have the plaintiff saying she was there 10 minutes earlier, and we have the store manager, Ms. Rivera, who testified and that she was there 5 minutes before and there was nothing on the floor. So both of those are bases to affirm the judgment.
That's just a credibility determination, which obviously the jury decided that it found the plaintiff more credible, right?
I don't think it's a credibility issue, though, because let's accept the plaintiff's testimony as true, which you're saying the jury did. What she testified to was 10 minutes earlier, there was nothing on the floor. And then 10 minutes later, then I saw... some tracks, but my own cart went through the grape. So I don't think it's an issue of credibility.
Her cart didn't go through the grapes.
I'm sorry?
I thought she testified that her cart didn't go through the grapes.
She said she saw track marks of another cart, but she's also asked about whether her cart went through the grape and whether her cart crossed over the grapes before she fell, and she says yes. I think the court can also affirm on the issue that the judge granted the judgment on as well, which is that there was no sufficient admissible causation testimony. The judge did primarily rule that way because of the failure to provide an expert report. However, we also brought up in our motion for directed verdict the fact that the doctor's testimony was based on a false medical history and therefore was not reliable and was inadmissible.
Did the court make any ruling on that?
Yes, the judge did. In the order on the judgment as a matter of law, the court discusses the expert requirement, but then he also says that if you look at the appendix, page 194, the judge discussed the fact that, trying to find the exact language, but the judge finds that also the doctor did not rely on any prior medical records, just what the plaintiff told him. And we cited in our brief cases that stand for the proposition that when an expert physician is relying solely on a false medical history, which in this case we showed that the plaintiff never told this doctor about her prior medical medical history, which she had numerous orthopedic issues before this fall, that the court and or a jury does not have to accept that testimony. And in response to Judge Pryor's questions earlier, I think that the court's granting of the JMOL did have the effect of striking this testimony. This is not a situation, which is what the appellant focuses on in their brief. This is not a situation where we're looking at a jury verdict and deciding whether the jury had sufficient evidence to rule the way they did, and then we're picking apart what is or isn't in the evidence. We cited cases for the proposition that a judge, after a jury verdict, does have the discretion when it's ruling on a judgment as a matter of law to determine whether certain evidence should not have been admitted. And if he determined, which he did, that the evidence should not have been admitted, then he does not need to consider that when he's ruling on the JMOL. And that's what happened here. I also just want to make one comment about the Sedent case, because counsel was suggesting that that is opens and shuts this case and requires this court to affirm, which I disagree with. It's not the silver bullet he's saying it is. First of all, it's interesting that Sedent came out about a week before the appellant filed their initial brief. They never cited it. We filed our answer brief maybe 2 months later. In all that time, it was never cited as supplemental authority. So it was not the silver bullet, and for two reasons. Number one, as we argued in the brief, I think this court has the discretion whether to apply it retroactively. At the time that the judge ruled, it was at least a majority position. Sedent discusses that there was a conflict in the district courts on this issue, but certainly the court did not abuse its discretion in following the line of cases that said that he was right, that an expert report was required. But secondly, even if this court finds that Sedent is controlling, it doesn't mean automatically that the plaintiff wins. At best, what it can mean is that the case should be remanded for the trial court to decide whether an expert report that complied with 26A2B should have been required under these circumstances. The court in Sedent said that although it's not mandatory that a treating physician provide an expert report, that a district court does have discretion to order it when deemed necessary. Now, look at our case. This is a case where the plaintiff,
Did you request that sort of relief in your brief here?
Yes.
What, can did. You tell me what page?
Excuse me. Whoops. Here on page 19, I argued that to the extent that the law has changed since trial, and if this court does not otherwise affirm the judgment, it should remand the case for a new trial and for an opportunity for the lower court to exercise its discretion in determining whether a further report was required for Dr. Figueroa.
But Costco didn't pursue its motion for a new trial with the district court after it granted the renewed motion for judgment as a matter of law. Hasn't Costco abandoned its motion for a new trial?
No, Your Honor, we have not. Because if you look at the Christopher case, which the appellant cites in their reply brief, at footnote 3 of that brief, the court talks about that ordinarily a litigant should do should pursue the request for alternative relief, which admittedly we did not do. However, the court says that you have not abandoned it. As long as you request a ruling, you raise the issue in the appellate court, which we did. Now, in Christopher, the party actually asked the appellate court to rule on the motion for new trial, and the court did so in that circumstance, but the court specified that it was a very unusual circumstance. Christopher was a case where there were two defendants. One, the judge entered a JMOL. The other defendant, the judge ordered a new trial. On appeal, this court noted that we've never before considered the issue where someone doesn't pursue the alternative relief below, but they do raise it in this court. And because of the circumstances here, we feel like we can rule on the motion for new trial. And those circumstances, which the court specified, were that the grounds for a new trial for the second defendant were identical to the grounds for a new trial for the first defendant, which the trial judge had ruled on. So for the same exact reasons that the trial judge had granted a new trial for this, for the one defendant, this court said it could order a new trial for the other defendant. Now, our circumstance is very similar to Christopher in that it wasn't pursued below, but I did pursue the issue on appeal. And what I asked for as relief because of our circumstances is that this court remand to the district court to consider the motion for new trial in the first place. And that's because we don't have a second defendant where the trial judge has already ruled. Of course, a motion for new trial is in the court's discretion, the district court's discretion. Case after case discusses how the judge who watched the trial, saw the evidence, saw the credibility of the witnesses, etc., the impact that bad arguments had on the jury. That's the person who's in the best position in the first place to rule on a motion for new trial. And then this court reviews an order on a new trial for an abuse of discretion, which the court can't do in a de novo way. So if you look at what we asked for in our motion for new trial or the grounds for our motion for new trial, it was regarding improper closing arguments, dealing with the plaintiff's weight, dealing with Costco's failure to produce a video, with juror misconduct, with the manifest weight of the evidence. These are the types of issues that ought to be decided by the trial judge in the first place. And I think the important point in the Edwards case and the Christopher case that the appellant cites is whether the appellee has abandoned their alternative motion for new trial. And we devoted a section of our brief to this issue, and clearly we have not abandoned that issue. We respond to one other point that the appellant made. He said that we did not request any of the relief we're requesting now below. That's not correct. Before trial, we filed a motion in limine asking that Dr. Figueroa's causation testimony be excluded. The court reserved ruling on that. During the course of the trial, more than once, we raised an objection regarding him giving causation testimony. Then we raised in our motion for directed verdict that his testimony was unreliable. We raised it again in a renewed motion for directed verdict. We raised it in our judgment from motion, notwithstanding the verdict.
What should we make of the fact that Costco didn't file a Daubert motion and didn't make a Rule 702 objection to the doctor's testimony?
Well, we didn't file a Daubert motion because he was listed as a treating physician, and we had filed a motion in limine that he be restricted in his testimony to that of a treating physician. And so there was no cause at that time to file a Daubert motion. But the judge did have the discretion when he ruled on the JMOL to recognize that the doctor had tried to testify as an expert and his testimony was inadmissible.
One more question for you. You said that you had devoted a section of your brief to arguing for a new trial, but looking back at your brief, that section was that the doctor's testimony was inadmissible, and then the last line of the section is the one that you read. Do you think that one line in the brief is enough to truly preserve an argument for a new trial?
I disagree with what you're saying, Your Honor, because if you look, starting on page 30, I have heading 3, alternatively, if this court reverses the JMOL, it should remand for a ruling on the alternative motion for new trial or remitter.
Oh, good. I was looking at the page 19 section. Thank you for referring me to this.
Yeah, and I believe there's about 2 or 3 pages that provides an overview of the reasons for the motion for new trial and an explanation why we believe it should be remanded.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to address the Edwards issue first. There are attempts to distinguish Christopher unavailing. Edwards did not have two defendants. Edwards says specifically, where the appellee failed to pursue its motion for a new trial with the district court after the grant of JNOV and failed to argue for a ruling on that motion on this appeal, we are not obliged to remand for such a ruling, and we deem that motion abandoned. They're asking for a ruling, not remand. All she asked for was remand. She didn't make the arguments related to the other issues in the case. She didn't ask for a ruling for this court on that. She just asked for remand. That's not what Edwards requires, not what Christopher requires. That's waived. It's abandoned. I have to dispute her statement that they made the argument regarding the reasonableness of the opinion. It's not in their motion. Their motion with respect to Dr. Figueroa and JMOL was one paragraph. I quoted it entirely in my reply brief. No mention at all of reasonableness of the opinion. It's not in there. The fact that the...
But what about her argument that they never thought that Dr. Figueroa was an expert and they moved in limine to exclude his testimony on causation? I mean, doesn't that combination raise the argument?
No, because if you want to raise a doubt, if you want to raise an issue with respect to the methodology of an expert, you have to raise an issue with respect to his methodology. You can say that he's not, they didn't say he wasn't qualified as an expert. They said that he didn't file a report and therefore he should be excluded. So if you want to challenge his opinions, you need to challenge his opinions. They didn't do that. They just said, you failed on a procedural matter, and that's all they did. And that's all they did in their JMOL. That's all they did during trial. And that's all the relief the court granted them. The court's reference to the fact that the treating physician was unaware of the plaintiff's previous complaints, that goes to weight, not admissibility. Even if they had challenged that, that's not a basis to exclude an opinion. If you look at Eastcold versus Rhodes, the Florida case that they relied on, what that case said was that a jury can disregard undisputed expert testimony if they're impeached, they're challenged, and one of the issues was there was that he didn't have a valid history. Jury believed his testimony in this case. So Eastcold has nothing to do with Daubert or setting aside opinions or anything like that. It's just whether undisputed expert testimony in that case can be ignored by a jury because the jury found for the defendant. They said yes, and here's why. That case has nothing to do with...
Did Costco raise that issue on cross-examination of the expert?
No. I'm not sure. I'm not aware of that. I mean, I don't have that in front of me, Your Honor. I can't tell you. I assume it's a fertile ground for cross-examination. Right? So, assuming that their lawyers did a good job, they probably did. But again, that's a basis for the jury to disregard the testimony, which they did not. And that's all that is. It's not a basis to set aside an opinion or exclude an opinion. counsel says that this court can't find the trial court abused its discretion in excluding the opinion based on the failure to file an expert report. That's exactly what this court did in Seaton. Excluding those witnesses under Rule 37 for their failure to file written reports was thus an abuse of discretion. Direct quote. So, yes, you absolutely can find it was an abuse of discretion for him to do that because the law was out there that said that the treating physicians don't need that. And now Seaton says that was an abuse of discretion at the time he did it. It didn't say we're finding it's now an abuse of discretion. It was an abuse of discretion. So I don't think this court has discretion to decide whether or not to apply Seton retroactively. The law, U.S. Supreme Court, is very clear that the law is the law, and it doesn't matter when it arises. It applies in civil and criminal equally. It must be applied in this case. She asked for sending it back to the court to determine whether or not the court will change the rules of C disclosure and request a more extensive report. I don't know how that would work. In Seton, it was a summary judgment posture. There was no trial. You still had the ability to go back and engage in that analysis they wanted to. It was discussed at the end of the opinion. Here, this has gone all the way through verdict. I don't see a basis where the court says, you know what, we're going to go back and unwind everything, let the trial court decide whether or not it wants to change the C disclosure requirements. The court says no, then the verdict is affirmed. If the court says yes, what do? We submit an expert opinion. Now we've met it, and we have to go do a whole new trial because of that. I don't see that there's any authority for that kind of relief. Unless the court has any other questions, I'm out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'd ask that you reverse and restore the verdict.